When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Blonde hair, blue eyes, nice skin, so gorgeous. We thank the life, gorgeous.
Thank the life, gorgeous. I love the life, gorgeous. Its torso is so tight.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's Kreggers. Some say Lord Kilby. The young people say Lord Kilby. Welcome to Life Gorgeous. This is where I share my magical life in hopes of improving your life. Special guest. We've had him back. We've had him on. We're having him back. The focus groups like him. They say he's funny and lovable.
Whoa.
Lovable. At the same time, this is Goldie, Julius Sharp comedian.
I am so excited to be here again. It's my favorite place, my favorite hangout.
It feels like home. We used to work together on the CBS Late Late Show. Goldie was on air and a great joke writer. Now he works on Family Guy. Although, are you on Ted, the new television show Ted, or are you on Family Guy?
I was on both of them. Ted is in hiatus. And I just want to say, you know, working for you, I didn't appreciate at the time that I would never have a boss ever again who would call me and say, you need to come to my office right now to listen to some Barry Manilow. It just never happened again. Like, you're young and you think, this is life. This will always be my life. And then 15 years later, you say, God, I was lucky.
You know, I went home one night after the show. I lived in that beautiful house, the old Dennis Hopper house in the hills, 1712 North Crescent Heights, only because there was a coffee table book of Dennis Hopper's photography called 1712 North Crescent Heights. And I went home and I had DirecTV and I was in my den having a drink after another wonderful show with Jonathan Silverman and I think Nick Swartzen was on that night. And there was a free concert from Kylie Minogue. And I watched it and she was shaking her moneymaker and it was fun. And I went to work the next day and I was opening up, being vulnerable. I said to Gibby, guilty pleasure, Kylie Minogue. And he's never let me forget that because, of course, he's into Bob Dylan. And I just mention a guilty pleasure. What's wrong with Kylie Minogue? Do you know who she is, Goldie?
I think Kylie Minogue is indisputably better than Bob Dylan. Like, you go, which of these is more enjoyable? Watching this guy kind of drone on about, you know, mom is in the basement making in the middle. It's like, or just, you know, sort of a joyous, free, uninhibited woman, just, you know. As you called it, the moneymaker, you know?
Well, I was referring to her hips as the moneymaker, but maybe shake your moneymaker. I can't remember how.
We don't have moneymakers. It's all money losers.
Couple things. I think this is going to air in about a week. So we're not necessarily going to talk about just this morning as we record this. Karl Anthony Towns has a meniscus tear. We don't know how serious. Devastating to the first place Wolves. They will not finish in first place in the West, but my goal before the season was top four, and I think we will finish in the top four in the West. You don't have to comment yet. Kirk Cousins, we don't know what's going to happen, but when this airs, he will probably be an Atlanta Falcon. Okay, I'll let you comment before I want to tell you something.
My only question about the Timberwolves is you don't see the team rallying around, let's do this for Cat.
Well, it's Naz Reid is a very popular player. He's going to get more run. I believe he's popular because of if his name was Joe Reid, he would not be quite as popular. This is Naz, the Wizard of Naz.
Now, I texted you this a month ago or so. I feel like you need to go on a tour where people apologize to you about the Rudy Gobert trade.
Oh, amen. I mean, everyone, and I had Ryan Russillo on after the trade, and he had said things that were asinine. And he says, I don't care that he shoots 60% and averages 16 a game. I said, well, those points do count in the game, in the final score. Like, what bothers people about Rudy is not that he's French, which probably bothers some people. He's not polished offensively. He's worked on his defense. He contests, he blocks, he rebounds, but he's not polished offensively.
Can I say what I think is the root? And I say this as a huge fan of you and a huge fan of Ryan Russillo. You made the team. Russillo didn't.
You mean I played ball or what?
Yeah. You made varsity. Russillo didn't.
Yeah. He's got a sore subject with him. It's a sore subject because he actually had some weird thing where he didn't even play in high school because the coach didn't like him or it. It's kind of weird when he unloads. Don't bring that up when you see him, when you go down to Manhattan Beach and have a drink with, or you don't. Yeah.
Just two shirtless bald guys having a cocktail.
Okay. If I seem rushed, it's because we're recording this early. Goldie has to go to work. He has things to do, but this is what I wanted to start with. You guys have a podcast. Did you just make it smaller or did you just move back? Oh, I see.
I just leaned back because I was comfortable, but I won't do that again.
Okay. Goldie and Alex Sulkin have a very funny podcast called A Typical Disgusting Display. And you did something a while back after the Golden Globes that made me laugh my ass off. You said the premise was I can write a monologue. These guys, and you went for a walk and you wrote a monologue and you did the jokes. And one of them just jumped out as a professional joke, paraphrasing it. Boy, I saw Oppenheimer. It was so long. I took a first date there and halfway through she said, "Where is this relationship going?"
Yeah.
Was that the joke or did I punch it up?
I said, and then when the movie was over, but halfway through might be even funnier.
Yeah, I usually would punch you and Ross. I like to punch them up. I'm just kidding.
Well, this was, I wanted to come on here and ask you this question because, you know, there's a shortage of hosts now. They can't get hosts for these events like the Oscars and the Oscars gets Kimmel because of ABC, but all these events now. They're having trouble recruiting hosts. And do you step in and offer yourself, say, for, you know, $1 million a night? Natural host, I'll come in. I know how to do this. You're one of the few left who knows how to do it.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. I do hear that often. I am so, what's the off that merry-go-round? It is so refreshing. And the other thing is, people don't know this, but I've always found pop culture, it doesn't interest me at all. So, you know, I live in my own world with the old movies and the, you know, I probably talk about Orson Welles too much for you. So award shows and the zeitgeist are of no interest, but, I do like, some of the creativity, from some contemporary shows. I'm going to ask you about one of them in a second. I wanted to ask you one more Family Guy question though. So, do the censors kill a lot of your jokes, or are you one of those guys that says, no, I got it down. I know what they'll take. I know what they won't accept. And it's easy breezy for you.
Well, the secret about network standards and practices is that they are just making it up. That, you know, outside of saying the F word or the S word.
Right.
They could really do anything at their discretion. And they've even in the past, you know, NYPD Blue has, I believe, said the S word. Like it's situational. So I don't deal with it personally, but we're kind of lucky that one of our executive producers, Rich Appel, is a Harvard trained attorney and he just grinds them. And then there's a certain gaming of the system where you make it worse than what you actually want to do. And they come back and say, well, you can't do that. And then you put in what you did want to do that they would have rejected had you given that to them first.
That's smart. So how many jokes per show do you think you guys have to argue over in an episode of Family?
What ends up happening is it's more, you have one joke and then different versions of the same joke. So if it's a story about, say, Chris, the teenage son, getting too many erections, and then you say stiffy, you say wood, you say boner, you say dick, you say... So it tends to be there are certain episodes because a story will be sexual that you wind up having to argue more.
I see.
And then there are some episodes where it just never comes up.
Right. Is it frustrating for you or is it okay?
Oh, I don't care about anything anymore. What difference does it make? You got one joke in one show that like is it on Hulu? I don't care.
By the way, where are you looking now? Because you're not looking straight ahead. Is the monitor?
I'll look at the camera. I, you know, 25 years into the business, and I'm still learning new stuff every day. Like, where do you look? Because when you do acting, you don't want to look in the camera. But when you do podcasts, you do want to look.
Exactly. By the way, one of my
I'm an actor, so I'm averting my gaze from the camera to give you the sense of you're watching me. But then when I turn to the camera, you know, I can go down the barrel. I don't have your eyes. I don't have the wonderful limpid pools, the clear glassy blue that draws the viewer in. You know, my eyes, I think they're a little off-putting. So
many, you know, it's so funny with the agile mind. You just, so many thoughts come to me when you're saying things, including this random. There's a line by Hemingway from The Old Man and the Sea that I really like. And it's like, everything about him was old except his eyes. They were the color of the sea and they were cheerful and undefeated. And I'm going to use that. I'm going to use that about my eyes on Instagram. They're undefeated. What does that mean, Goldie, when your eyes are undefeated?
I would think in the Hemingway context, it means that like, while your body has been battered,
right,
through age and toil, your eyes have remained youthful.
Or maybe the alcohol never touched his beautiful blue eyes or something.
Is Hemingway good or bad? I mean, that's just a really interesting question.
Can I answer that?
Sure.
Okay, so I don't know if you ever saw that movie, Midnight in Paris, the Woody Allen movie with Owen Wilson. And
I did.
I enjoyed it, and I just laughed so hard at how they portrayed Hemingway in the way he spoke, which is the way he wrote. But I get a kick out of very easy to read. The Sun Also Rises is the one I have, and I reread parts of it. But I like him.
Yeah.
And all I can say is my brother likes F. Scott Fitzgerald, which has more compound sentences and you know, and my brother will admit that some of Fitzgerald is difficult to read because he gets very wordy. So Hemingway is not wordy, and I think there's an art to that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I do remember doing The Sun Also Rises in high school, and my teacher, who was old and kind of just over everything, said, you know, I don't remember the sentence, but he said, "What do you think this means?" And we're all like, you know, not going to answer. And then he goes, "It means his dick didn't work." We're all just 16. It's, you know, 19.
Oh my God. 90.
It's like 1988.
You just reminded me of something. There in eighth grade, I think I can say his name. Yeah, he was a great teacher, Mike Obler. And we were doing I think we were taking a test, but everyone was quiet. So we were down, our heads were down, taking a test, and he would just walk down the aisles and just observe, make sure no one was cheating. But it was just silent. And he liked me. This is eighth grade. Craig, he whispered to me as he walked by, "What's pink and rubs across the ocean floor? Moby's dick." And he kept walking. Then he kept walking. Is that funny? My eighth grader English teacher in Hastings, Minnesota.
Oh. I like that he targeted you.
You had to know what he was like. He was very quiet and he had a beard and he was kind of kept himself together, well-dressed. "Craig, what's pink and rubs across the ocean floor?" So I'm going to go right into writing because you're talking about writing. And I know you wrote a book, So You're Going Bald. Do you have any pet peeves in writing? I think you told me once you're not a fan of exclamation points. Is that true?
Well, society has changed in terms of what the exclamation point means, and you have to use them or people think you're being rude. Or, you know, someone texts you and you say thank you and there's a period or no punctuation, they're like, "Oh, he's being sarcastic," or "he doesn't really care." But now everything, you're like, "How are you? ! You know.
Well, so. In your book, did you use a lot of exclamation points, or are you careful? Because I don't like to, because it could mean you're shouting or you're too excited or hyper. But
well, since it was a comedy book, I mean, there were exclamation points in there for right. sure. But I mean, that wasn't the book that I anticipated writing when I was, you know, I thought I was going to write the great American novel, not when I wrote the book, but I mean, right. when I was 20 years old, I had all these notes for this big novel I was going to write. And I carried them. I moved out here with them, like I had the notebooks, because I thought, well, you know, I'll write for Kilbourne a little bit. I'll get back to my novel.
Right.
It's just sitting
well,
there.
You're, by the way, your book is very funny.
Thank you.
I know you say you were disappointed that it didn't quite hit the top 10 New York Times bestseller.
You know, but it's down to about 2 millionth on Amazon. So I think that's pretty good.
Are there any, this is another one of my questions. The reason I bring up exclamation point, because I think I wrote something once and you jokingly said, could you throw in a few more exclamation points? But have you ever in your life used a semicolon? Because I've used colon. You have semicolon.
Yeah.
Really?
Well, a semicolon is kind of a nice FU to everyone who's less intelligent than you, because you're like, you know, it's like doing sort of going to the public skating rink and doing a triple Lutz. Like, you're like, just so you know,
how would you
I
use
can
it?
Do this?
Right.
I don't do it every time.
I don't use them. I use colons on occasion.
Colons are great.
Love them. I call them dashes, but they're called something else.
Dashes are wonderful.
Yeah. The double that the M whatever it's called. The longer dash, and I use dot, dot, dot. But how do you use a semicolon?
Well, a semicolon is, I believe, technically two sentences grammatically, but they're very interrelated.
Oh.
So interrelated. It's sort of similar to in a script when you say, smash cut to, even though you're just cutting. Which is just all you're right. doing is putting one frame up right. against another frame, but you're showing people, you're like, no, you know how it's 30 frames a second, you know, more per second now,
right.
high def, but you're like, well, we're taking two extra frames out of that cut. So it's going to be really quick. That's what the semicolon is.
Interesting. Now, I bring this up because for the listeners, Goldie and I worked together a number of years. He was very modest. He either had a good, a high ACT score or SAT, but not both, I say jokingly. No. Which one? What was it?
I mean, ACT? It was pretty high. I took the SAT. I believe I got a 660 verbal and a 690 math. So that's 1350.
And you went to Columbia.
I did.
Yeah. But you, I
but
think
not
you said,
when it's way harder to get in now. When I was there, I tell you the whole story about my first night there? You all sit in a circle in the dorm room and you all go around and the RA says, you know, say your name and why you went to Columbia. And so,
oh, cool. No, I want to hear that.
The first
I like
person
that.
Is like, you know, I'm Ari, blah, blah, blah. And I came to Columbia because I didn't get into Harvard. And then the next person's like, you know, my name's Sophia. I came here because I didn't get into Yale or Penn. And then it comes around to me, you know, I say, my name's Jonathan Goldblatt. And I go, I really didn't want to come here. I hate Columbia. I think it's like just the worst place, but I have this rare kidney disorder. And unfortunately, the one machine I need to be hooked up to in the United States, there are four of them. And the only one on the Eastern Seaboard is four blocks from here. So I was forced to choose Columbia, but I'm incredibly disappointed to be here. And like, and no one thought I was joking except for the guy who became my best friend there.
That's hilarious. Yeah. Oh my God. So only one guy was really laughing in the room?
Yeah. And then of course I lost every woman immediately. Just, they were not interested in.
So a few years ago, I can't remember if you told me if you're, cause I do have, there are inconsistencies in the English language. And did you say you were not good with grammar or not good with spelling? Which one was it?
I'm pretty good with spelling, but I actually don't really know a lot of the grammar technical.
Okay. Well, that's opposite of what you just showed with the semicolon. That's part
of it. I might have been wrong.
Okay.
I just wasn't going to say that.
Okay, so here's one that's happening a lot. These are a lot of these broadcasters and journalists covering sports, and it just hurts my ears. They say him all the time when it's supposed to be he. So, you know, him and LeBron need to score more. Talking about Anthony Davis, him and LeBron need to score more in the fourth, and it's he and LeBron. And I've even seen tweets where guys say him, and it's just like, is it just going to become accepted? You know,
yeah, with some of these, that one.
Yeah, I mean, I mean,
there's no way Anthony Davis is going to score more.
Let me see what I have. Tell me if you ever
Do you think there are Anthony Davis fans? I did want to ask you this. Like, has there ever been a player who's just sort of? There's been this expectation. I don't believe that the year they won the championship in isolation, that was a rec league championship to me. Like, that's, the bubble is not a real championship.
Everybody had a chance. They won it. I mean, but you got to realize something. Prior to Jokic, when he's healthy, AD was considered the best big man in the league. He's a very good defensive player, and he can score offensively. But he just, you know, his injuries are not as bad as
when he retires. Will anyone even 2 years later remember him?
Yeah, those of us who are not as narrow as you with your Boston mentality of just only Boston sports, and you know, you like KG and you like Kendrick Perkins. AD is a hell of a ball player.
I would say he's the most forgettable sort of big star of our era.
What about the unibrow? Or, you know, what about that? Did you care about that?
No.
Ever used the word nonplussed?
Sure.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I've never used it.
You should. Have you ever heard it go right now?
He was nonplussed. It's confused and bewildered. I'm nonplussed. I don't like the way it sounds. Because then you think, well, what's plussed? You know, it's just like, it's just not a word.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll tell you a couple. Have you ever heard of the word facile?
Yeah.
Now,
I've never heard anyone use it as much as you. But
well, because I heard, you know, there was this trumpet player, Arturo Sandoval, and he had this trumpet evolution.
I'm more of a Gap Mangione guy, but go ahead.
And he would play these songs like Maynard Ferguson. He was able to adapt each trumpet style to the trumpet player, Harry James, etc. And facile, I've heard some people say facile, but it's facile, and he's very effortless.
Well, it's from the French facile, is why.
And it's the second meaning, though, which I find interesting, effortless. And the first meaning is superficial. So that kind of throws me off. So I don't use it that much, but I always liked it that it was effortless and kind of smooth as a trumpet player.
Yeah. Did you play an instrument?
I did not. And I wasn't as disciplined as my brother.
Don't take this in the wrong way. It's hard to picture you wetting a reed.
I learned three chords on guitar when I was young, and that was that. And everyone else played piano. My brother took lessons and played piano. My mom taught piano. My dad played piano by ear. I know you play a little piano because you learned how to do that.
I'm more into guitar. I mean, right. My piano's just gone out the window.
I thought the calluses on my fingers on the guitar affected my shot, especially affected my left hand finger roll. So that's, does it bother you that there are different pronunciations, acceptable pronunciation for words like herbs or herbs?
I don't think herbs is acceptable.
Okay. I have a friend that says herbs, and I think it's acceptable. So that would obviously bother you. Thank you. Here's one.
Yeah, that's wrong.
Okay, here's the one that bothers me. So there was this nerdy guy that was kind of irritating, and I knew him. And I've always heard the word pronounced flaccid, which is acceptable.
Sure.
And he said flaccid, and I got upset.
That's insane.
And it's accepted. There are two pronunciations. I know.
I mean, I don't really want to be involved in a conversation where something is flaccid. Like, there's no positive use of this. And it's like, and then fortunately, it was flaccid.
I know. I do. I love the word until the guy said flaccid, and it ruined it for me because I loved hearing. Okay. Eschew.
I would say S-Chu. I don't think there is an S-Chu.
There is an S-Chu. Because I used to see what Don Nelson S-Chu'd the timeout. It was always the...
I do feel like sometimes I mispronounce words only because I've predominantly read them and they're so rarely used in conversation.
Right.
But then, you know, I say to myself, I really want to throw this in there and, you know,
yeah,
register having used this word. And then, you know...
Are there any words that people use that drive you up the wall? Because I remember, you know, Ross Abrash used to say, you know, writing jokes for me, like shooting a fish in a barrel. He couldn't tell what I liked and didn't like sometimes. He was having fun. But, you know, I didn't like the clinical word, you know, for the V monologues. I would call them the V monologues.
Sure.
But that's, you know, there's something wholesome about me and prudish.
Yeah.
But are there any words that bother you that your friends use? Not profane, but just in general when somebody, or is that too random?
Yeah, I can't think of one that leaps to mind immediately.
Okay.
I mean, I think the problem is as I've gotten older, I've gotten so desensitized to everything. I think in the past, more things bothered me in general, but now it's...
And you're not as irritated because are you guys not in a writer's room together with the energy there? Or are you just doing it from home or what?
We're almost never all together, but we are in smaller rooms. Generally, 2/3 of the staff comes in on any given day, and then 1/3 is out on Zoom. I hate Zoom. I mean, not for this, but I don't want to be on Zoom 8 hours.
Right.
Awful.
Right.
And I think it's really bad for comedy.
Oh, yeah.
To try to come up with, if you and I were sort of pitching on Zoom for 40 minutes on like, oh, I got to make a speech. I got to give a toast. Okay. But if we're sitting on a script, I mean, you know, there's something about being in the room with other people that makes you want to finish so you don't have to be in the room with the other people that creates good work.
Yeah. Remember when we were in my office, besides the Manilow, when we'd write jokes and then Ross would come in and hand me his sheet and make me read them in front of him and he'd laugh. And that was fun. I always enjoyed that.
I mean, I don't think I'd ever seen someone curl 15 pounds so many times as you with your dumbbells. I mean, you were at the forefront of the like high reps, low resistance movement.
Wait. So this is, I do make fun that I'm one of those guys that ever since I was a kid, my brother and I would lift weights and he was very muscular. He had veins popping out and do you know those terms, ectomorph and mesomorph and endomorph or not? Do you know those terms?
I've heard them, but I would say I don't really
know. So one is the fleshy guy, mesomorph body type. Someone who was strong with a medium bone structure, athletic build. My brother was a mesomorph. And then I think I was an endo. I was a skinny guy. But I just remember we had a Charles Atlas weightlifting book. And they said, if you don't have big calves, no matter how many toe raises you do, nothing will really happen. And then, of course, so I lift weights, but nothing happens. But I feel better. I get a little burn there. You know what I'm saying? Did you ever lift weights as a kid? Did you ever go to the gym?
I didn't. There was one year when I was 17 that one of my friends said, hey, you know, we could each get a varsity letter if we sign up to do pole vaulting because the track team doesn't have a pole vaulter.
Yeah.
And so we said, okay, the summer before, it's like, this was pre-internet. So there was no information on like, what would you do to become a pole vaulter? And you couldn't watch a clip of someone pole vault. Like we just had to guess. So we were like, we better lift weights and then we'll be pole vaulters. So we spent the whole summer lifting weights in this crappy local gym. And then it just came time to try to pole vault and there was no instruction. We just had the pole and we're just running at the pit trying to stick the pole.
Oh my God.
And like, we just couldn't figure it out. And then I quit.
Okay. That's a really difficult event. Pole vaulting. I mean, yeah. I mean, that's like, I high jumped. My brother high jumped and actually had the record.
Did you do the Fosbury flop?
Great question. Because I wanted people. So do you know what the other one was? The original one was called the barrel roll. And you'd go up over your body with your leg. You'd go front. And then the Fosbury was your back.
Kind of flip over?
Yeah. And they, and back in like the 60s, they didn't have mats that you'd land on. They had sawdust. True story. And then Dick Fosbury came along and did the Fosbury flop where you went over backwards, you know, back and you'd arch your back. And that's what I did. But I'm not flexible, and I'm not even going to say what my high jump best was, but my brother did 6'4", and it was, I say it stood for 25 years at Hastings High. He told me it was 15 years that it stood there. And then he says he jumped 6'8" down in intramurals down at Rice, but he was a leaper.
Yeah.
And he was a good athlete, but no, we took the protein powder and we were obsessed with Arnold Schwarzenegger and a guy named Sergio Oliva, who was a bodybuilder, and Franco Colombo. I don't know if you go through stages, but it's like we were into cars, then we're into 10 speeds, then we're into, I had magic books, abracadabra.
Yeah, I went through a magic year.
Yeah? Sleight of hand?
Yeah, I did, you know, the balls with a half hollowed out ball.
Oh.
I liked finger style where you go close up and cards and coins.
Yeah.
You know, because I never liked the trick where you were pulling something like you're like, does anyone have a silk? You know, and it's like, gentlemen, does any gentleman have a handkerchief and a silver dollar? And you're like, no, not 1908. No one has those items.
I was at a camp when I was really young at Princeton. It was some camp in the summer, and a guy comes in, he puts us to sleep, but he'd reach behind my ear and get a quarter. And I thought it was the coolest thing, you know?
Yeah.
Johnny,
do you have a rubber thumb tip?
I did the real sleight of hand. I didn't do the trick things. I did the real, I could take a ping pong ball and, you know, make it disappear and blah, blah, blah.
Did you have a Tarbells? The now six manual. Tarbells was a six volume magic guide written in something like 1870.
Right.
It was sort of the definitive book of that time. And, you know, it was all about how you can sew a secret pocket into your waistcoat and hide a bird inside your pants and all that stuff.
It's the other thing as a child that was similar was there was a brief period where I read a lot of biographies, and I read a biography on Harry Houdini, the escape artist.
Yeah.
And he could just get out of everything. I just thought that but I'm older than you, so I don't know if you even know Harry Houdini, but
of course it
meant a lot to me. Then later when I read the Bob Cousy story, The Houdini of the Hardwood, it all came full circle.
Do you ever, I always think about that one guy who at Cousy's retirement, you know, they asked for a moment of silence and then he just goes, "We love you, Cous."
There
always has to be one of those in Boston.
It makes it more memorable.
Did you watch the Belichick documentary?
I was going to ask you about it's called the Spygate documentary. So
yeah, I'm sorry. It isn't the Belichick documentary. You're absolutely
okay. Right. No, wait, tell me what it is. Is it about the Patriots or it's about Belichick or both? Or
it's
what is
it? 10 episode documentary about the Patriots, but it is a total hatchet job by Robert Kraft on Bill Belichick. So it's
really,
it's ostensibly, there's a good word. It's ostensibly documenting this great dynasty, but it does things like it basically says explicitly, Aaron Hernandez asked Bill Belichick to trade him to the West Coast. And had Bill Belichick done this, he never would have committed a murder.
Oh my Lord.
Which is absurd. Really? Yeah. He would have just killed the guy out there. He didn't care.
Who said he would not? Who in the documentary said if he would have been traded, the murder wouldn't happen? Who said that? Not Robert Kraft.
It's just sort of implied. I have to admit, like, I don't have 100% total recall of how it went down, but I do feel like Kraft says, you know, I had a great relationship with Aaron. Every time I saw him, he would kiss me on the cheek. And then they show footage, but then it's Kraft kissing Hernandez on the cheek, and you're like, you've conflated that in your mind. Like, you would kiss this guy.
In the doc, who comes out better, Kraft or Belichick? You're saying Kraft comes out much better?
If you didn't know anything, you would think craft as a hero. But this is a larger point I wanted to make to you and to see your reaction to it. So, like, the documentary is essentially lionizing Bob Craft. But when you see an NBA championship and they bring out the trophy, or you see the Super Bowl, and they hand the trophy to the owner, is that a great moment for anyone? Is anyone like, oh, yeah, the owner's holding the trophy. That's awesome. Sweet. Or are you just like, give it to the coach, give it to the players. They earned it. But for Kraft, in his mind, I think it's like, and then when the owner grabs the trophy, everyone's like, this is the best. The owner deserves it all.
Yeah. I think the only time, because there's one owner, I like Mark Cuban, so I was happy for him.
But he's
a different breed. He's one of those down to earth guys, and for being so successful. But I know what you're saying. What else? What was the Brady? Did they go into the Brady Belichick thing? To me, you know, I watched from afar. It was a dynasty. It was kind of amazing because the Patriots were not very good for ages, and they might continue that now. But they had this not a blip, but a dynasty. But the fact that Brady left and won at Tampa Bay to me is like mind blowing. Like, how does that happen? But I mean, he chose a good team with a good defense. But does it get into that? Does Belichick regret pushing? Didn't he push Brady out?
I think he didn't push Brady out, but he just said, you know, this is going to come to an end at some point. And, you know, he had the salary structure in mind. It hasn't gone into that yet because they only released 7 of the 10 episodes.
I see.
Toward the end.
Okay.
But I also think that every NFL team, and I think this with the Vikings as well, is like, any team that has a good defense and good lines is really a competent quarterback away from like maybe winning the whole thing.
Yep. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. That always gives me hope that there are, the weird thing is last year when the Vikes went 13-4, not this past year, but the year before, went 13-4, Kevin O'Connell's first year. But we had a really bad defense. And then we fired the guy, and then we got Brian Flores this year. But we lost a playoff game at home to the Giants. We kept scoring back and forth, but our defense couldn't do anything. We just kept scoring. Some of us were quietly relieved because if we won, we had to go to San Francisco. And last year we thought, oh, we'd get annihilated. But then this year, San Francisco is still good. I really respect them, but we beat them at home. It was like one of our best games. And without Justin Jefferson, and Kirk had his best game. But as long as there's not a super, like Kansas City is not dominant. Mahomes is just really good.
Right.
And so you have, every team kind of has hope. And that's why those games, like with the Patriots and the Seahawks in the Super Bowl, were close. Against the Giants, they lost. Giants weren't, they were good, but they weren't great. So that's what gives a lot of teams and fans hope, is not too far away, if that makes sense.
Well, I also think, as someone who watches Hard Knocks, I don't know if you ever listen to that guy, Mike Lombardi, his podcast.
He's
a former general manager.
Yeah.
He's really intelligent about football. But basically, by listening to him, I've learned there's really two types of coaches. One is the idiot coach who just is basically like Robert Saleh and Hard Knocks, going, did you guys know there's only one type of bird that'll attack an eagle? And sort of telling their team dumb anecdotes and dumb quotes and refrigerator magnets, and then assuming that their skill will carry them through. And then there's like a Kevin O'Connell who's a strategist,
right,
who knows tactics and will adapt. And so I think like the Vikings and about 12 teams have that type of coach and could win if things roll their way. But like, you just need good lines, and you need a coach who will like watch the game a little bit and kind of say, we need to do this and that. Whereas like, instead of just going like, yeah, guys, come on, you know, fight.
It's interesting because a couple things about Kevin O'Connell, we call him KOC. He likes to pass. He needs to run a little bit more, but for like 8 years, like when Zimmer was there, our offensive line was, we just didn't have enough time. We didn't have the mobile quarterback, except for Case Keenum was semi-mobile. So you're right about, you have to have the good defensive line and offensive line. But I was going to say, I don't know what's going to happen with the Vikings. And you don't need to follow them, but Kirk is most likely going to go to Atlanta. We're supposed to draft somebody, J.J. McCarthy, move up and get somebody, maybe Drake May. And then it's a crapshoot. You saw what the Bears did. Trubisky, they passed. They could have drafted Patrick Mahomes. They went Trubisky. Then they went Justin Fields. And now they're going to go Caleb Williams. You just have to keep trying, right?
And let me ask you a question, because you said, I say the V monologues, whatever. Yeah. If the Minnesota Vikings draft Michael Penix, will you be able to say his name?
Yes, I will. That's very funny. I did want to ask you, what do you want the Pats to do? They have the third pick.
Yeah.
So you want them to take one of the quarterbacks, right? Either Jaden Daniels Penix.
I don't know.
Oh, you like Penix?
I think it would be the greatest jersey to wear. I think it's just so fun. And I think the guy's got like a rocket arm. I know he's injured, whatever.
Yeah, that's the so there were guys.
I love a guy with a good arm who just can, like.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
You know.
God, they just compared him to somebody. It was a compliment. I can't remember a very successful quarterback. They said, and I don't remember who it was.
As much as people say you need the mobile quarterback, and you do, it's like even Mahomes doesn't run that much. It's situational.
No, when he has to, he can get 15 or 20 yards.
But like Lamar, it never quite works when they're too good at running. Like
correct.
It almost just
100% right.
Doesn't quite get there, but they need the arm like Mahomes has. And then
Aaron Rodgers can run when he has to, you know, so I don't know it's so hilarious how nobody knows if these QBs are going to be any good.
And Lombardi talks about this really intelligently too. It's, you know, they give them all this intelligence test and Stroud failed it last year, I guess.
Right.
Bryce Young was amazing at it. And you go, that's not the only thing that matters is the tape. And you just go like, I don't know that much about football, but even I, when I saw Bryce Young say like, that man is too small to be doing that with bigger people.
Yeah.
You know, or when you talk about the like Russell Wilson, it's like, I've watched football the last 5 years. He's not as good as he was. You shouldn't give up, you know, however many first round draft picks and this and that. Like sometimes I think they question themselves so much. It's like when you talk yourself into a restaurant into the thing you didn't want, because you don't want to be boring. Like you go,
right,
I want a filet mignon. And then you're like, you know, but they do have catfish and I so rarely eat that. And then next thing you know, you're eating catfish and you're like, I don't even like catfish that much. I like filet mignon. What am I doing?
By the way, you follow the NFL. I've always considered Russell Wilson better than Kirk Cousins. Now, I've seen him. We had to play Seattle all the time. We actually lost to Denver this year because Russell Wilson marched down in the last minute. And they say he's not what he used to be, and he's also polarizing in the locker room. But if Kirk leaves, I'm going to give you the names that people are talking. They're calling this a bridge quarterback. We're going to try to draft a rookie, have a bridge quarterback. Do you like Russell Wilson?
I think I like him at the minimum salary.
That's what he'd get. He would get that because Denver's going to pay
everyone
him.
Else. He'll be great. I don't think he should be. You should be paying him $55 million a year.
It's going to be. He's going to get paid by Denver, and you'd sign him for. Okay, that's what I think. But and there are a couple guys in Minnesota that agree, but most of them say no. Okay, you ready? This one makes me laugh. And this is a prominent, Sam Darnold might start next year for the Vikings.
I quietly suspected all year that he's better than Brock Purdy.
Really?
I would just love to have seen him get a chance for two games. Wow. I don't think Purdy's very good. I'm one of those people. Like, I just think it's all system. I think even Mac Jones would look like Brock Purdy on that team.
Interesting. Well, I do know when they signed him as a free agent, Sam Darnold, somebody in the organization said, we haven't had someone that can throw like this since Joe Montana or something like that. Like his throwing motion or something is really good.
I think he could be like Geno Smith. People don't realize how good he is because he's never been in a good situation.
You know, we had Rich Gannon and he didn't play well. Then he played well where he went to the Raiders. It just happens sometimes. One other name. Would you trade? This is for the Vikes. If Kirk leaves and you need a bridge, Justin Fields.
I think Fields is really fun to watch.
He is fun.
I think he could be good. I think he could be good.
Some guys said he doesn't have the swivel to look at all the receivers, but he's great at running. Blah 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 blah. So I don't know.
I feel like especially on turf, he'd be really good.
Right. Are you optimistic that the Pats are going to be good or mediocre?
No.
Or what do you think? No?
No, they'll never be good again. It's over. That was like the Belichick thing was extraordinary. The Brady thing was lucky. They're the cheapest team in the league. They don't – all the personnel people who were smart were friends of Belichick. They don't have anyone very smart in the building. I think – Jonathan Kraft is probably like a little overconfident in his abilities because he was, I think because they were near Belichick, you know, it would be like me going, I watched you host the show. I can host the show.
Right.
Oh, and it's like, no, you can come out for like,
it's inflammatory. It's like irresponsible. It's childish. It's asinine. Yeah. I mean, that's just, I don't even know if I should keep that in. I was going to say something. I just read yesterday. So Belichick doesn't get a coaching gig. I don't know how badly he wanted one, but it was potentially there. But then they said, well, he's getting more interest for television. And then they just said, because Jason Kelce, the center from the Eagles that retired, he's getting more interest now than Belichick for TV analysts. Your thoughts?
I don't like the Kelces at all.
Ooh.
I don't see it. Oh. I don't see it. I think Taylor Swift is making a huge mistake. It's like she has all these songs. She's been on a 15-year search for a guy, and you wind up with this idiot screaming Viva Las Vegas like the whole verse. Like if you want to say Viva Las Vegas and then drop the mic, okay.
Right.
He's like Borat singing like 9 verses.
I've got to ask. We're going to finish up with the Life Gorgeous quiz. I have one question I'm very excited to ask you.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask you about Richard Lewis, who passed away. And I had a little history with him. He was a really, really good guest for me on The Daily Show. We had him on a lot, and he was great. I don't know if you had thoughts on him or if he wasn't your speed.
I wish I did.
That's okay.
And I feel bad saying this.
Right.
But it just... You know, that's sad. I thought he was fun on Curb Your Enthusiasm, but I don't know much about him. And
okay, because I didn't want to put you on the spot. Because some comics, some comedians, who do you follow now?
I'm the one person when someone dies in general, I won't gush about them, and I won't try to make it seem like I knew them.
Well, it's funny because some comedians I know Alec likes to because some comedians are a little dark where they'll do jokes as soon as someone passes, they'll say, something about the guy's personality will be, blah, blah, blah. And they might write a joke. But are there any of these guys, like, do you have an opinion on Shane Gillis or Bill Burr? I know I've asked you about Bill Burr. You like him, correct?
I think Bill Burr is hilarious. I think Shane Gillis has good material, but he has the delivery of like a third month open micer. I think he has no stagecraft at all.
Is it because he laughs a little bit after he says a joke? I've only seen a little bit of him, but
I think his speech is bad. I think his physical body looks like he doesn't know what to do with his arms.
Okay.
I find him uncomfortable to watch. I would rather read a transcript.
Right. Interesting.
But well, listen, he doesn't need me. He's doing great.
Right.
I do have one stock joke for when comics die. Tragically cut down after his prime.
What was your joke that you used to lead with when you would come out and do stand up? It looks like I'm a pot smoker, or I'd be good at it, or something.
Something about it looking like I'd be good at smoking weed. But I mean, I had hair and stuff.
Oh, so yeah. You still do stand up?
No, thank God.
Any desire? No.
No. Would you want to go out in front of an audience of morons and with no context and just start saying stuff and leave it up to them to decide whether it's funny?
Is the joke writing for the shows Ted and Family Guy incredibly satisfying?
No.
Goldie, it is time. We're going to finish up because I know you got a lot to do. Life Gorgeous Quiz, simple questions, profound insights. Describe your perfect road trip in California. So this is in a car. You have a family. I don't know if you're taking your kids with you or you're just taking your wife, but what is it?
That's a fantastic question. That's a really good question.
Right.
And so I'm going to go with this answer and I'm not sure it's right, but okay. I'm going to start talking and see if I agree with myself.
Okay.
So you just start driving north, you go up the coast, you go up the one and you hit it all. You know, you hit your Santa Barbara, you hit your Big Sur, you hit your Cambria, you know the towns.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing the greatest hits.
Yeah.
You just keep going. You hit your Carmel. You have a meal in San Francisco, you drive through. But where am I? Here's my ultimate destination I'm going all the way up to Sacramento. I mean, I'm really doing this. And then I'm going up the mountain. And my end game is I've gone on Airbnb and I've rented a little A-frame right in Tahoe City, Lake Tahoe. And I'm spending 4 or 5 days in the fall after Labor Day when most of the crowds have left.
Mm.
And I'm enjoying the warmest the lake is going to be, the clearest it's going to be, the least crowded it's going to be. And I'm just sitting at the lake contemplating life.
Is that September you're there or when is that?
I think it's around the third week in September.
Okay. I've never been to Tahoe. But I've been to all the other places, man. It's so much fun to drive up Carpinteria, Santa Barbara, Los Alamos. They have a Michelin mentioned Bell's restaurant there, Cambria. Yep. You've been to Cambria. So that's a good one. Yeah. It's pretty. The thing I like about it, cause I don't like flying, is I can go whenever I want. I can pack whatever I want and it's the greatest. You know what I'm saying? I love it.
Yeah. So you gotta make it up. You gotta take that VW and maybe head up to Tahoe.
Yeah. We're going to take it somewhere. Tahoe is that's a hike, man. That's a hike. Isn't it?
I mean, it's one of the, when you see how clear it is, it's almost unbelievable how clear the lake is.
Have you been up to Yountville or Napa?
I've never been.
Oh, okay.
No. Now that I don't drink, I don't know. Is that still fun?
Well, I mean, the food is amazing, you know. But okay, next question. Did you ever play basketball on a low rim and dunk? And if so, how did it feel?
Yeah, I've played on an 8-foot rim and I've dunked. And I think that if there were an 8-foot league, I would probably be the Kiki Vandeweghe of that league.
Oh, he could score. He could score.
Oh, yeah. And he could do it all.
You know, there was a Sports Illustrated article about the farewell tour of Dr. J, and they were listing all the gifts that the other teams gave him on the road when they give him a tribute. And then he played at Portland, and the gift was Kiki Vandeweghe as a defender. That was the line. next question. I don't know if this is this. I don't think it's rude. I think it's fun. How many toupees do you own? I know there was a time when you would experiment with wearing hair pieces, toupees. Do you still have them? How many? And how many do you?
I have to say, there's probably no sadder day in your life than when you throw out your toupee. And it's something that I've experienced where you just go into the kitchen garbage, you know, with a white bag. Because it gets emptied more frequently, and you know you don't want it around, and you just throw it on top of some old broccoli crowns and coffee grounds, and you just say, like, this is the end of the dream. The real hair didn't work out. The fake hair didn't work out. It's over.
So you had one toupee?
I had one. They're very expensive. The toupee I had.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. So, and you're going for a fitting and everything.
Well, then you have to also get the haircuts around it, right? Because the rest of your hair grows. It's locked in to look a specific length. And the way, and look, Tom Brady clearly has a hair system, I think, when you watch this documentary. But the key is like the hairs, the sort of side hairs that connect with the top side hairs. It's all about matching the lengths of those. Oh. Like people always think it's the top. That's not where the wizardry is. Like it's like we talked about magic. The top is a misdirect. They want you looking at the top. The real sort of seam or whatever, it's toward the side.
Oh, wow. So it's an ordeal, and you spent time on this. You went to a place and it takes a while to they manufacture it just for you, or they take one and they adapt it to you.
No. I mean the real good ones, which is what I had, is they do, you know, you do all these measurements, you take a cast of your head.
Oh.
And then they send it to Thailand for what they tell you several times is real human hair. And then it comes back, I think it was a month and a half later. And it's sort of a wire mesh thing that's soft, it's pliable, but it's still a little heavier than maybe it should be. Like, it definitely feels like, you know, if you wear a hat that's a little heavy, like if you put on a cowboy hat and you and I are used to wearing a cowboy hat, you kind of after, you know, 10 minutes are like, I think I'm getting a mild headache because this, I don't like having it. It had that. It's like, it's like a weighted blanket on your head. It's just pushing down a little bit. And then they, you know, you've grown out your hair in the interim, and there's about a half hour haircut where they're matching your haircut to it. And then they're gluing it on.
Right.
Which, you know, so you could really fool someone. Like you could, you know, be intimate with someone if they didn't know you, and you could fool them into thinking it was actual hair, I believe.
So this was a good question, because for the listeners, you might think Craig was being rude. I knew Goldie had a toupee. You used to say, what do you prefer, this or this? You know, bald or with a toupee. And I can't remember what my answer was. But when I hear this, I guess my follow-up is, how long did you give it a shot? Did you keep it for a year and say, I'm not sure yet? Or was it like a quick decision after a few months said, I don't think this is going to work?
Well, I knew a week in I didn't want to do it, but because I had spent, I think it was $1,400 on it, you kind of go like, I can't throw it out yet. So it was in a drawer. And then, you know, I don't know if you have this, but once a year you kind of go through everything and you say like, am I using this? Do I need it? The money's gone.
Right. Let me ask you a side note. So when I did the show, I would get gifts, and I'd get jerseys all the time. So when the Sixers played the Lakers in the finals with Allen Iverson, they'd give me a Sixers jersey signed by Allen Iverson, but I think it said Kilbourne on the back. So I have a bunch of these jerseys, and they're in the garage.
Right.
Should I ever put those on eBay? I don't want them. Should I, or is that cool for me to do that, or should I not do that?
Yeah, I mean, you could do a charity component, or if you just want the money, just do it. But I, you know, people
could
overdo
it. I get the money and take you out for dinner.
Well, that would be good if we went on a like a Michelin tour that was funded by the jerseys and then made a documentary about it. Sure.
Right. Because like, they're just sitting there.
Have you seen those trip movies yet? I know I think I talked about them last time I was on, but
you're talking about Coogan, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I haven't seen the movies. I've seen the clips, and it's just like, it's just so funny.
If you want to get together and watch Trip,
right?
I will definitely do
it. Great. In my beautiful den here.
It's wait, so good.
Wait, I had this on there. I forgot to ask you, have you seen Slow Horses or not?
I have not. I'm sorry. I didn't have time to watch it.
No, that's okay. People have been telling me, more than one person has been telling me for months, and I finally watched it. It's with Gary Oldman, and it's entertaining. It's very entertaining, and it's three seasons. There's going to be a fourth, and I just watched all three seasons. I think you'd like it. It's good.
I'll watch it as soon as I learn whether Belichick is responsible for more murders.
This is the question I wanted to ask you. We have two more questions. You're from the East Coast, but you live on the West Coast. East Coast and West Coast people don't really know the flyover states.
Right.
Four states border Minnesota. Can you name three? Four states border Minnesota.
Wow, this is going to be humiliating. As I know.
I wasn't sure.
Well, I'm gonna guess.
Okay.
And then you're going to have a big laugh. I'm going to guess North Dakota.
Correct.
Only because I've been watching Fargo.
Right.
And they crossed to Minnesota. So because I guess North Dakota, I'm also going to guess South Dakota.
Bingo. You got two. You only need one more.
Okay. Now I'm going to go Idaho?
No, that's way over near Montana to the west. No, that's funny. It's funny that people from the East Coast, Goldie grew up in Boston, ladies and gentlemen. So he does it. Went to school in New York.
I know this is going to be a botch. God damn
it. Well, you know what? I'll give you a hint because some people, we have a big NFL rivalry with the state.
Wisconsin.
Yes. You got three.
Okay. But only, I wouldn't have guessed that.
Okay.
I'll tell you what I was going to guess in all fairness.
Yes.
It was so wrong.
What?
I was like, Nebraska?
Yeah, no.
No, nowhere near.
The state below, it's not that far. Yes, Iowa is directly below Minnesota. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Because there are people from Iowa, the Ashton Kutchers of the world, the Patrick Weitzels of the world, and they don't like the Vikings. And Weitzel chose the Green Bay Packers, and Ashton Kutcher chose the Chicago Bears. Because they didn't have a pro team, but Iowa is right below Minnesota. Good job, you did well. I didn't think you'd.
That's a great question.
Yeah, I know. I find it interesting because I sometimes don't know how close Nebraska, Oklahoma, Texas, where I know Texas and I know New Mexico and blah 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 blah. So it's kind of interesting.
Yeah,
I couldn't find Rhode Island on a map. Vermont. And finally, Goldie. Have your daughters ever accused you of liking your dog more than them? I know you love your new dog.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, my line about my dog is I should never have shown my family I'm capable of loving something that much.
Yeah, I could tell you like your dog. That's great. That is great.
I mean, there's nothing better in the world than pug ownership, I will say. Yeah.
Thank you, sir. I know you're busy. That was
great
fun.
Questions today. Thank you.
That
was a pleasure.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was my friend Goldie. The focus groups love him. We will see you next time. And remember, young people, I'm proud of you.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.